Hey, everybody. This is FinOps Fridays, our podcast hosted by Apptio and IBM, where we just try to talk FinOps. We try to get industry experts to share their wisdom, advice, experience, and also have a good time. Video stream live on LinkedIn, post to YouTube, and the audio is a little bit longer, and you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information, head over to apptio.com. But for now, let's dive right into the podcast. Thanks for listening. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us today. Again, my name is Hunter Willis. This is FinOps Fridays. Today, we have Josh Bowman. Josh, tell us a little bit about yourself and experience with FinOps. You've been active with FinOps in the community, doing this for over a decade. Tell us about yourself before we get diving into things.
Well, today, Hunter, I'm the voice of the FinOps practitioner inside of Apptio, and that's been built off of a long career being in this industry. Where, you know, a lot of it came from was my previous role there at Electronic Arts. And at EA, I did everything that you could possibly think of underneath the FinOps disciplines, the 18 different tracks that we have there. Started off coming out of grad school and joined the finance org at EA and supporting IT. And at the beginning, I was like, oh, I want to be a CFO someday. And after a little bit of time, I figured out I really enjoyed financial planning and analysis. I really didn't find any interest in treasury or accounting or royalties. I really liked financial planning and analysis. So I figured out, hey, okay, I like forecast, I like variance analysis, I like working with my customer on figuring out their budget, and, you know, making them successful. So a few years passed by. I, you know, continue on the FP&A track. Get an opportunity, you know, start looking broadly, more broadly in my career, where do I go? And figured out I really liked supporting IT. I didn't want to, the job opportunities, it didn't really interest me to do HR or facilities or other functions. So I really, you know, this is starting to be career limiting in the finance space of, I just want to support IT. And so then, you know, what EA being a software as a services company, really video games are a custom application every single time. I looked over the fence of supporting our custom, starting off with our corporate assets, looked over the fence and said, you know what? It'd be a lot more fun to support our games. And being a custom built application, that's probably terrible for an engineer because you have to start it from scratch every single time.
Right.
But as a technology perspective, you have no migrations, you have no tech debt, you're starting from scratch, which means you get to take advantage of bleeding edge technology. So all the way back in like 2012, cloud was something being deployed for video games, custom applications. And that was a lot more exciting to do from a finance lens than your ERP systems or your Outlooks or, you know, things like that. So I jumped over and started supporting our games.
Almost literally getting to play with all the new toys at multiple levels, right?
That's absolutely right. It's you know, you're on bleeding edge technology, and then it's supporting video games. How cool is that? And after a few years, you know, supporting the, you know, from a finance perspective, I looked at it and said, you know what? I'd rather be a financially minded operator than a operationally minded finance person. And that really opened up the door for my career progression. So I made the jump to the dark side of ops and said, I'm going to be the finance's best friend, and I'm going to understand everything from a technology perspective from the business. And then how does that relate back to finance? So forecast, allocations, showback, building data warehouses in order to support all that data, building reporting to visualize that, getting into even more operationally minded things like capacity management and cost optimization. That's been my career over this period of time. And I've really grown up as the industry has grown up. It's, you know, when you first started, it wasn't called FinOps, and now it is.
Yeah, you kind of had this opportunity to build up a finance skill, right? And then it's like, at a certain point, you were able to apply that to the technology when you found a passion. That's really, really cool, man.
Yeah, you gotta, and it's one of those where I didn't see the future. You know, I knew cloud was going to be a thing, but this was the path that I was very interested in, is the merging of technology and business together and how those things worked really well. And it just so happened that we're in a great industry and things have continued to expand. And then one of the days we coined the phrase FinOps, and all of a sudden it gave a little bit of definition to what we were doing. So it was really exciting.
Yeah, and on top of that, I know that you've been active in the community. You've talked with a lot of people and helped out with the FinOps Foundation. You've spoken a whole lot as well and participated, giving advice and, participating and receiving advice as well, that back and forth exchange that happens. So thank you for all of that too, by the way, and being such an active participant in all of it. So that's exactly why I was excited to have you on today, just being able to draw from that experience. You've seen a lot through the industries. You're talking through some with so many people, right, as well, not just, your experience at EA. So let's go ahead, answer some rapid fire questions here before we dive into the episode. Okay. So I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Just fire back at me as quick as you can, starting with introvert or extrovert.
In between, I thought I was an extrovert, but more introverted than I first thought.
That'll happen. On the beach, to the mountains, or are you going to take a tour if you go on vacation?
Probably the mountains. I do the mountains more than the other ones.
All right, dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Cake or pie?
Ooh, I'm gonna go pie.
Pick one, spring or fall, you got to choose.
Oh, fall. That's wine season right there. Yeah, fall.
All right, coffee or tea?
Oh, coffee all the way. Yeah.
All right, morning person or night owl?
So my wife has turned me into a morning person.
Nice. That's funny. Okay, meetings online or in person?
I mean, in person's better than online, but we're getting used to it now, you know.
All right, so Slack or Teams?
Oh, Slack. I haven't given teams a fair shake, but I've been Slack for quite a number of years.
And then chat or email.
Oh, chat. I think everybody should move to chat here.
Android or Apple?
Oh, I go back and forth, but I've been iPhone lately.
All right. And Mac or PC in that vein?
Oh, I got to give PC the win there because spreadsheets are the best tool of all time. Excel wins over everything right now.
Nice. All right, Josh. Want to start by just diving into some of that experience. I wanted to ask you, so from a high level here, right? Just pretending that, let's say I'm in an organization that's brand new to FinOps, right? Like, we know the principles of the FinOps framework. Teams need to collaborate. Everyone takes ownership for their cloud usage. There's a centralized team that drives FinOps. Reports should be accessible and timely, right? Decisions are driven by business value of cloud and taking advantage of the variable cost model of the cloud. Some of those are more kind of collaborative operationally, like you mentioned, right? The operation side of things. And some of those are more like raw, like technology and finance numbers focused things. So tell me, what do you think with all of those steps and trying to like wade into this as an organization is the most important thing organizations should keep in mind, either as they're just starting or kind of moving maybe from that crawl to walk phase in like early FinOps adoption and trying to socialize it, et cetera.
Yeah, the biggest thing that I found, right, is it's a journey, right? And you really need to be able to give yourself credit and celebrate those small wins along here, right? Incremental, every day just be a little bit better than the last day is that, because when you look at those six principles, right? I don't know, it's really hard for me to I almost look at it like a six-legged stool. I know there's normally the three-legged stool, but I almost think of it as a six-legged stool, right? To create a highly functioning organization, you need all six of those. But coming out of the gate, you're not going to get all six right away, right? You're going to be able to make progress in one of those areas or two of those areas. Maybe it's starting with the team and being centralized from that perspective, or maybe it's, getting a stakeholder on board to show the business value of cloud, right? But every organization is going to have a different journey along there, right? There's not a recipe that says do this first step and then do this second step and do this third step. And I wish I could give you the most important one of those six. I'm gonna kind of sidestep you there and say they're all very important,
Yeah.
but it's in that order of, hey, let's make incremental progress in one of them and then celebrate that win.
Well, I think that's it, right? I think it kind of goes without saying that they all they all go together. You've got to kind of move in there. I feel like the things that you touched on, though, right, like organizational buy-in and making sure that you get that, and like making sure that you are taking all six of them into consideration and not just trying to like dive in towards one thing before you start to pick up on the rest. Because if you, like, let's say I say we want to take advantage of that variable cost model of the cloud, looking at like commitment spend and right sizing and all these things, if I come up with some grandiose plan to enact all of that and then throw it at my engineers, they're all going to look at me like, you know, hey, did you want to include us in this? Right? Like, you got to get that, the buy-in, the collaboration, and vice versa. Do you have, like, thinking about your journey at EA, when you kind of started walking down that cloud journey and that FinOps journey, what was that like from that experience, right? When you were kind of getting the ball rolling along with others to make that happen, when there was kind of this aha moment maybe that you knew this needed to be a thing that was going to happen.
Well, EA, we cheated a little bit, and we didn't know it at the time. But when you look back at it, and you're like, what was it that really made us successful? And EA, video games started at adding online componentry just a little bit at a time, and it started with the game itself, right? So FIFA would add something of an online component. Battlefield would add something of an online component, but it was directly related to the gameplay. And and this is 20 years ago that we're talking about here. After a few years, they figured out that, there's commonality on these back-end systems that are being built that are helping support the online component of these video games, right? It's not essential to gameplay. And that's really what you wanted your engineers and your studios working on, is how do we make the best game, right? Not how do we make the best online backend system.
Right.
And so EA was ahead of its time about 15 years ago. It hired a CTO and consolidated all of the technology that wasn't essential to online game, that wasn't
Right,
essential to
any
the game
specific
itself,
game or yeah.
but helped support it from an online perspective. And when they made that decision, they said, you know what? We've always wanted to make sure that we have a profit loss statement for each of our games. FIFA wants to see, hey, is it profitable or not? Madden wants to see if it's profitable or not.
Hey Josh, we're going to
Let's,
need some reports.
yes,
Right?
and let's keep those costs inside the P&L. But at the same time, let's have one invoice from AWS, one invoice from GCP, one invoice from Azure, instead of 200 like we did the day before. So EA said that one decision, they went full charge back overnight. They went from the day before of FIFA having its great relationship with its cloud vendor and having its own invoice, to the next day having no insight to any data whatsoever. It was just coming over in a journal entry from finance. So imagine if you are in the game and you get a $20 million journal entry with no backup. We had to mature very, very quickly on our data transparency back to our internal partners, because they were used to being able to do things right away. And
So
so it's
talk
this.
about that. Talk about that right there. I'm sorry to interject, but talk about the buy-in and socializing this, right? Was there a methodology that you went about, or was it like you kind of got the stakeholders on board and then it became a top-down initiative, or?
Well, that was the thing, right? Is we wanted our cake and we wanted to eat it too, right? We wanted the exposure to the P&Ls internally, right? These are internal chargebacks, but we wanted to be able to, negotiate with the cloud vendors, have one invoice, right, from that perspective. And the only way to accomplish that was by creating that chargeback methodology out of the gate. And then once you did that, it was kind of Pandora's box. You couldn't shove everything back in the box. We had already made the decision of how we were going to do it, and we got everything wrong, right? We charged things wrong to the wrong end user. Sometimes we charged things to Sims that should have gone to Apex. We charged things in the wrong month. We set up bad, sharing methodologies for how we were doing shared costs. But because that regimen was in place, that we were doing the chargebacks every single month, and the games, they could yell, but it was already there. The Band-Aid was ripped off from that perspective. So having that disruption and that short-term pain turned out to be really worth it. instead of having to go through years of trying to get there over time. And so sometimes if you look at it and you know what you have is a great idea, if you can convince your organization, or you can trip over yourself and, fall into it like we did, sometimes a short-term disruption with a lot of pain is going to mature your practice very, very quickly and get you in a much better spot than you would have been otherwise.
And so when Josh says it's a journey, right? You're here in the journey, right? It's not painless, but the long-term benefits are, I feel so often in the change management space, right? When I shouldn't say space, but like when it comes to change management, it comes to long-term projects, sometimes it's really hard for people to keep their eyes on the prize, so to speak. And I really like that one of the things that you included in what you were saying to me and also the notes you sent me, right? I was like, oh man, this is great, 'cause those incremental wins have to be celebrated because it keeps everybody remembering what that prize really is, right?
And that you're bringing up a good point. One of the things we did right there from a cultural perspective is, when we first started, it was a win just to create a forecast for the quarter from that perspective, right?
Nice.
And so we all went out, to team building and celebrated that. And then you look back a few years later, it's like, man, that we're so much better at this now. It's table stakes or whatever. But like, you don't be impatient with it. Know that, hey, like every time that you're able to do just one more little thing, whether it's forecast a little better or figure out a right sizing, exercise from that perspective, or get one more stakeholder buy-in or whatever. All of those things are very important to that journey that you're on.
Something that I took have brought with me experience-wise from like the migration implementation world is like, pizza parties and coffees and stuff like that, they don't work in lieu of a promotion or like a salary bonus, but they absolutely work as a soft tool to kind of grease the wheels of collaboration and put benchmarks on these things if you're able to do that. There's places in like the federal public sector space, for instance, where that doesn't work at all because they don't really have the ability to provide those kinds of incentives. But there's little things that can be done and recognitions that can be sent out as well. Did you guys utilize that at EA in addition to kind of, benchmarking those milestones and celebrating those wins?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was, you and it depends on where you're at and your like how your company culture is and things like that. My group, like we did escape games, we did treasure hunts. Our group was open in Austin. It was based in Austin, so we, did tour of the capital, the state capital, things like that. But it's also crossing, right, with the other groups that you work with, right? Maybe one time you're going to do something with your engineering group. The next group, you may do something with a specific business partner from that perspective. But building those bridges and showing the importance of the work that you're doing and celebrating that is very important, right? Like you said, it's a team type of thing here. It's not necessarily individual performance. It's what did we do together that really helped the company here? That's to your point, right? There's individual recognition and there's ways to do that. This is really looking at team recognition and what the organization was able to accomplish, right? I find those in different ways that you're able to celebrate those things.
For sure. For sure. Okay. So let's pause and let's turn around, right? We've been talking about operations. We've been talking about, change management and from, from that FinOps perspective and like cultural implementation of FinOps and chargeback, showback, et cetera. Let's talk about FP&A. Let's say now you're in the operations side trying to get the finance teams on board with things. You had We talked earlier a little bit about this, but just like what's your perspective from, again, turning from that operational side, getting buy-in from the finance teams when it comes to all of this?
So I mean, finance is like one of the first ones that the FP&A group, right, is one of the first ones that if you're on the operations side, that's one of the first ones that you want to be able to get buy-in from. And it's this the same is reciprocated from the finance side. One of the first things that you want to go find out in the organization is somebody that's business-minded within the operations group, so the engineering group. So either way, whatever side of the fence that you're on, if you're in finance, go find a business-minded person inside the business. If you're on the operations, the engineering side, find somebody that is on that finance side that cares about your particular piece of business there. And the reason that like each role there, right, is going to benefit immensely from each of partnership. When I was on the finance side, the person that I was working with was my closest business partner. I had relied upon them to give me insight into technology spend that I just couldn't get from a finance view. Finance is only going to go so low of a granularity. Great example is, finance statements only go to a monthly granularity. Clouds, they charge you by second, right? From that perspective of things, right? So I relied upon my operations team to give me that insight to really explain what was going on to everybody else in the finance world. So you get that insight. So I was always, hey, you're my closest business partner. How can you help me get further insight if I'm on the finance side? On the operations side, you can utilize your finance team a lot, right? Finance, they're structured, right? On purpose. You want your finance organization to be structured. They have quarterly, if you're a publicly traded company, you have quarterly deliverables you have to report out to the street, right? But even if you're not publicly traded, there's going to be some sort of cadence that you're on that you're reporting up your results. You can take advantage of that as an operator to have, sometimes finance can be the bad guys or even accounting if that is, if you don't want to, put that, but it's like, hey, let's get into this rhythm. Let's get into this, cadence with things, right? Finance can help you push where it needs to from a business perspective based on their requirements of being a regimented organization. So that's just a couple examples there, but both sides, and I've worked both and I've been, on both sides of trying to get each other help. And that's where I built the most relationships is making sure that you are together in parallel of what you're trying to drive from an incentive perspective.
Well, and they're also for better or for worse, or to different extents at different organizations in charge of the money, right? So
Oh,
like
yeah.
your budget and everything. So I would add to that, and you kind of said this in a different way, but just like to simplify those points, like make sure you have business people that can explain what's going on to your finance teams so they can easily
Oh, and
understand
you,
it and have a
yeah.
system for it, right?
It's both ways, right? So
Yeah.
your business people have like finance is a different language than IT. And that was one of my former managers actually called us, my group, that we were the gray matter between finance and operations, right? And that's and it can sit on either side, right? You can have your finance can be very technically minded, so that can drift that direction. Your business can be your technical resources can be very financially motivated, right? So there's a coming together of those two functions that really make this work. So there's no right one way to do it. It's based on how your organizational culture is, but you definitely want to be able to take advantage of both sides of that because you have shared incentive to drive towards one of the six principles, right? Your business value. Right, that you need both your finance view and your technical view in order to accomplish that FinOps principle of business value of cloud.
So let's kind of bring this all home, man. Like we've had this great conversation. We've talked about the operation side, the finance side of all of this, getting buy-in, operationalizing things, and all of the different, steps and considerations, a lot of them that it takes to get, from just running a cloud organization to looking at efficiencies, chargeback, show back, getting buy-in from finance and making it, a cohesive relationship. What just from a high level and kind of jiving all of these six principles together as part of this framework, can you basically give one piece of advice or encouragement for organizations that are struggling with this right now, that are really trying to get things rolling and kind of deadlocked beyond just, taking all of it, making sure that you're looking at all six things at once, which is great advice, right? But I like, for instance, just remembering this is a journey and where you're going with it, right?
Yeah, the other one that I would offer there, just to give you a little bit more tangible beyond the journey, which you got for sure, is if you're looking for one place to really start and kind of benchmark on, right, it's data transparency and consistency, right? It's really being able to, show what's going on, right, to everybody, getting them, in that rhythm of saying, hey, you may not even know what the numbers mean yet. You may not have established KPIs yet, but just getting in the understanding of this is what the numbers are. This is, hey, we've done it this month. We're going to do it again next month. We're going to do it the month afterwards. And make that incremental progress on it. But the very first thing is getting that level set, right, of data, transparency across everybody. It's like, I really am a huge believer in the democratization of data and making sure that all the parties have that information there. So that's tangible. Hunter, I agree with you. Incremental progress is where it's at. But one piece of advice there for you is the data transparency.
So let me get your reaction to this. So I've heard this from about five different enterprise organizations where when they realized they really needed to implement a chargeback showback and were having trouble getting buy-in, they just, this is so great, and I laugh every time I say it, but these organizations, and again, multiple organizations doing this, put together the numbers and they just go to a couple of business units and just show them how much IT is spending just on their stuff. And the numbers are usually so large, they get, and again, I've heard this so many different times, crazy reactions. That's not possible. Stop trying to blame us for all this spend. Prove that this is our numbers. And then they calmly just say, listen, we're not trying to, nobody's trying to hold anybody accountable here. We're just trying to show you. We would love to show you how all this was generated. Come on, let's have that conversation. And again, buy a cup of coffee. We'll talk about it. Right? And then that's how the chargeback motion starts, right? It's just like, and do you agree with that? Have you
Oh yeah,
seen that
no,
before? You feel like that's.
the only thing I'd add to that is that if you go to your first business, choose the business partner that you think you're going to have the most, I'm not going to say positive reaction, right?
Sure.
Like, but like that is that you have the most chance of collaborating with, right? And if that goes south, that's okay. Go to the next business partner. I've had a lot of success in my career of, when somebody told me no, and I know it's the right thing, I just knew I'd asked the wrong person. So I need to just go ask a different person for that same thing. So in your scenario, this is the add thing to add, right, is hopefully the first time you go to a business partner, they get exactly the reaction that you're talking about. But if you get shut down, that's okay. Go to the next business partner, because you're doing the right thing. You're starting that data transparency road. You're democratizing the data. And then there is going to be somebody that is going to be willing to, collaborate with you and dive a little bit deeper into it and want to learn more. There's folks with natural curiosity. Just seek out those folks with natural curiosity, and that's going to really get you collaborating and get that incremental win for you.
All right, Josh. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. Thank you very much again for your passion, your enthusiasm, and bringing your experience to bear here. I want to give you the open opportunity. If there's anything else you want to add, say, or talk about right here before we sign off.
Well, you mentioned it earlier about the FinOps Foundation and the community here, right? The only way that we get better is by sharing our stories and learning from each other. I would have been nowhere close to as far along the path of what we've been able to accomplish as it wasn't for other people that are like-minded like me in the industry that I can bounce ideas off of. I can think of hundreds of folks that I've asked questions along the way that were much smarter and much more advanced than me at the time. And that's the only way I learned was by asking those folks. So same to everybody out there, you're welcome to ask me, Hunter, anybody in the industry. That's something that's really good about this is that collaboration. And it goes beyond the company lines even of, hey, we're just all trying to become smarter about this. And if we learn about this as an industry, that's going to come back and help me out as well too. So that's it right there, Hunter.
That's fantastic. Josh, thank you so much. Again, that's Josh Bowman. He is available on LinkedIn and also the FinOps Foundation. Just head over to finops.org. That's FinOps.org. That is their website. There's tons of great resources, information, collaborative content, advice, and also they've got KPIs on there. So if you're really trying to look for actual tangible, actionable information, that's in there too, along with industry-specific guidebooks, advice. And then, of course, they have like a community with lots of information on there. So go check it out. Thanks for watching today. Again, my name is Hunter Willis. Thanks one last time for a shout out to our guest, Josh Bowman, today. Take care, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks.
All right. Great conversation with Josh. Really appreciate him and his time and expertise for joining us today. Now it's time for our mailbag segment of the episode here. And so today we have a couple of questions actually from Joe. The first question is, I just secured my first cloud economist role. So it was first FinOps focused role with no direct or prior experience aside from my FinOps practitioner certification. Can you please advise me some key activities I should undertake in my first few weeks and months as I transition into the new role? Bearing in mind, this is a net new role for the business. All right. So the first step that the FinOps Foundation lists for getting started into FinOps, right, is to basically take upon yourself a research project. So research possible advocates, champions, executive sponsors, research pain points being experienced by the organization, research impacted groups, teams, and individuals during those conversations, who's affected by those pain points. When talking to practitioners and people that have a ton of experience that I have consulted with about this particular question, though, too, their advice was to stick with the money, right? Follow the money and how it's distributed by your finance team. So understand how your cloud organization has resources allocated to it from the finance teams, and understand how that money traces out to the different business groups that are supported by finance, right? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, from the financial perspective that you're going to be working, you've got to be able to follow the money and follow those justifications, right, and work with the finance team to make all of this pan out. So working on that fully burdened cost allocation, being able to look at all of the cloud spend that you have for your cloud organization and understand how that is allocated out to the business is really that first step of your research project. Now, this is largely also going to go towards your inform phase, right? Being able to take the end result of that research project and let that be at least the beginning of a tagging schema where you can tag the different workloads and resources that you have according to how they are allocated by cost to the organization. Because, again, in order to start looking at, you know, your amount of committed spend to save money and do cost optimization, right, which resources are going to be right-sized and who that's going to save money and what that looks like, you're going to have to approach it from a budgetary standpoint. Ergo, you're going to have to understand the budget of how that money's allocated, right? So start with that financial allocation and then work up towards, hey, all right, now you're getting buy-in. Now you're building a plan on how you're going to address the optimization of costs, increasing your commitments, doing analysis for right-sizing of resources, and, you know, then moving on towards, of course, the operate phase, right? Really building a practice around all of those things moving forward. Definitely look to the FinOps Foundation, though. They do have a good playbook on how to map all this out and kind of build a roadmap and follow through with that. And then, of course, there's other advice from the community as well regarding these things. Now, Joe's follow-up question is, can you please also advise on how an organization might optimize a data lake in Azure? What strategies might one put into place to gain visibility and cost control on a data lake being provisioned? Is there also a best practice to forecast costs of the data lake? So first thing I would say is that you can either use the native reporting tools that are provided with Azure and Power BI. They have templates for that to get reporting on your cloud costs for data lake storage, right? But also the resources that are there. There's also a lot of third-party tools. You mentioned in the communication that I was sent, Joe mentions that he has an AWS Cloud Practitioner certification as well. So likely he's in a multi-cloud environment, meaning it might benefit him as well to look at a third-party tool to help kind of bring all of that into a single pane of glass, as well as make proactive recommendations for things like commitments and right-sizing and, you know, report on things like anomalies as well. Your tagging of information, your structuring of the resources and the storage itself will help you also maintain accountability for that, so that a cost allocation and keeping track of the reporting on it. Now, to get more into the details, you know, Azure looks at a data lake. They're not just as the data lake itself, but as a combination of the data lake and the blob storage they have. So it's important to understand that you need a strategy for data lifecycle management, understanding the applications and the resources that are dependent on that data and what data can be offloaded, right, either to cold storage or deleted. And you need to have a data lifecycle policy to set an expectation of how long y'all can keep data. You also need to be in compliance with any regulatory requirements that you have around that, right? So your legal team, your records management team might say, hey, you, after 7 years, everything has to be deleted no matter what's going on, right? Especially if it's not being used, etc. So that is one aspect of this, making sure that that data is tagged, structured, organized, and efficiently managed. Right, from an architecture standpoint, will help you save on costs. But the biggest thing is understanding beyond deleting the data that you don't need or making sure that it's in the right kind of storage to save money, understanding that the workloads and resources that you have that are dependent upon that data are also costing you money, right? And that's really when people say data lake, they need to not just be thinking about, okay, the data itself, yes, that can get expensive, but all the resources, right, that are dependent upon that data can also cost the organization money, meaning you need to track for the optimization of those resources, both from a, hey, are they under my committed spend portfolio, or and also are they right-sized, right? Are they being optimized? Are they efficient resources, right? Are the queries that are running efficient? Are some queries like practically causing an anomaly every time they run against that data lake? Or are some like way more expensive than others? And can those teams work together to make them more efficient? Are there any redundancies around that? And those kinds of things. So, I mean, in essence, to one, some extent, that's kind of an app rat situation. But it's also, there's a lot of pure, like, hey, get reporting on those resources, understand what can be right-sized, and how much of that spend can be done through purchasing of commitments. Now, Joe also asks about forecasting here in this question. You obviously will need to get a certain amount of data for to understand your usage patterns, right, in order to be able to forecast. So basically understanding how quick that storage is growing and what if there's any seasonality around that, right, or any seasonality expected around that. But also you need to account for net new spend, right? As you're working with business groups and you're working with finance teams, it's really important to understand what initiatives may be coming down the pipe that might cause that data to grow or the usage of the resources dependent upon that data to be used more frequently, right? So your costs go up. So accounting not just for like a pattern of growth, right? Or like an algorithmic, kind of like that straight line of a growth pattern around a resource or data storage, but also being able to incorporate seasonality and net new spend for those resources is extremely important. And again, there are third-party tools out there that can help you generate forecasts around that. But this is also, you know, the forecasting and budgeting part of FinOps and managing your cloud spend is extremely important because ultimately the capability of being able to forecast and forecast accurately is really going to help your organization build trust with the wider org, right? Especially as you're working with finance teams because your forecasts, it's for a large part, are going to inform your budgets. And so you really have to get beyond, and I know a lot of organizations struggle with this. It's definitely called out by the State of FinOps report, data.finops.org. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to this episode of FinOps Fridays. If you have any FinOps questions or questions about the podcast, reach out to us at finopsfridays@apptio.com. You can also find more information at the website there as well. We're also really active on social media. So hope that you like, subscribe to our content. And if you have any questions, you can also comment there. Hope to see you next time. Hope you have a good one until then.